We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
This is a WWJ News Special, The Grief Factor. Over the next hour, we'll be talking to experts, sharing personal stories, and answering questions about the many forms of grief and ways to help. Now, here's WWJ's Greg Bowman and Brooke Allen.
Good evening. We've been inundated with news of suicides, traffic fatalities, and shootings, but we really have not been talking about the people left behind trying to pick up the pieces, the grief factor.
Well, there are five stages of grief that we know about: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Not necessarily in that order always. Some say those stages can happen every day around the clock.
And we do have two experts here. Judy Malinowski, she is a psychologist at Ascension Eastwood Clinics. Also, Peggy Nielsen, the manager and founder of Sandcastles at Henry Ford Health System. It is a program for families with children and teenagers between the ages of 3 and 18 coping with grief. And thank you so much, ladies, for being here. We really appreciate it. And Peggy, do you want to start off by telling us exactly what your program is?
Sure. Sandcastles is a program, as you said, serves families with children between the ages of 3 and 18 who have experienced the death of someone loved. They can come from any type of death, any relationship. So it can be a mom, dad, brother, sister, grandma, grandpa, best friend, whomever. And the death can be any of any sort. But we have a few different offerings. We have a year-round support group program at 8 different locations throughout the 3 counties that families can join and come to on an every other week basis for support and to be with peers. We also have a weekend camp each summer in August. Last year, we took 122 kids from 1st through 12th grade to camp for the weekend for a grief camp. And then we do some school-based programming. We do community education, really anything that is needed.
And Judy, we'll get into the specifics, obviously, talk more about grief and all that in the moments ahead. But just talk a little bit about some of the work that you do and some of the help that you've given people, and maybe whether you've seen a spike in people seeking help lately.
Well, I'm with Eastwood, and we're part of the Ascension St. John Providence organization. We have numerous clinics all over the eastern, southeastern lower Michigan. And what we do is we address, from children all the way through adults, grief and loss is one of the main issues that we have been dealing with lately, just because of what's been happening in the media and how people are now feeling that they can come and talk about things that perhaps in the past that they didn't feel comfortable talking about. So we have some amazing social workers, psychologists, counselors, and in many, many cases, they are quite versed in how to counsel those individuals on grief and loss, whether it's the loss of a loved one or even the loss of a job, divorce, any of those things that we look at through life, because loss is part of our daily life.
Thank you, Judy. And of course, if you have a question, you need help, you can call our listen line. We will be answering your questions throughout this hour. The number is 248-327-2949. Again, that number is 248-327-2949. You can also comment and share your stories on our Facebook page.
This WWJ News Special, The Grief Factor, continues. Once again, here's WWJ's Greg Bowman and Brooke Allen.
Welcome back. We're covering a lot of ground this evening, and we're joined in the studio again by our two guests, Judy Malinowski, psychologist at Ascension Eastwood Clinics, and Peggy Nielsen, manager and founder of Sandcastles at Henry Ford Health System.
And you may have heard of the five stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And so I have to ask you, ladies, do most people experience these stages? But first of all, there might be an issue with that word, stages.
I think that's a really good question to ask. For most of us, when we think of stages, we think of these hard, fast processes that once I get through one stage, it's going to lead to the next, it's going to lead to the next, and then everything will be, it's just very clear cut and I'll know when I'm done. That's not how grief works. Grief is a process of dealing with the emotional pain, the feelings that come from loss. You may go through a different emotion in an hour's time. You may experience the sadness, the loss, the anger, shock, guilt, all of these different things in a very compacted time, or it may take months. It may take weeks to go through that. It could be something as simple as you're walking through the mall and you see someone that reminds you of someone that you've loved and you have this emotional response. It comes out of the blue and you're not prepared for it. So when we talk about stages, we have to be very careful that we don't give this false impression that once you get through one stage, you're done with it. It may resurface itself and it may come out of the blue in the play in such a time that you're not prepared. So I think that's what we do in therapy. We enable people and we support them in understanding how they're going to process those emotions when they do arise.
Okay, so Judy, is there a different word we could substitute for that? Or, I mean, are we just stuck with stages and we just have to understand that these stages are going to keep cycling the rest of our life?
I think we could even use the word emotional responses. These are emotions that we're having. And, you know, whether it's anger, whether it's sadness, whether it is acceptance, there is a level of emotion. You know, we're putting words to what we're feeling. And that's where, as human beings, we can fall short, because oftentimes what we're experiencing, we don't have the words for. So I do understand when people say, well, you know what, let's call that anger, let's call that something else. It could be a deep sense of fear. It could be a deep sense of anger. But because we're not sure what that looks like or even what the experience is, we really need to be able to talk about the emotions that someone's going through, the feeling states that they're going through.
I wanted to get a comment or a take on this. One of our listeners had this comment that said his mother passed away from cancer. He couldn't grieve. He didn't cry. Even at her funeral, he felt, he wasn't ready to do that. And finally, his wife wound up rushing him to the hospital one night. He couldn't breathe. He thought his lungs were collapsing, that he was going to die. I mean, is that a typical reaction? And I don't know, I guess that's part of the denial phase, that I'll be okay. I mean, what do you tell someone who says, I can't grieve, I can't cry?
Well, we all can. And I would say to that person, it may take some time for you. And the whole process of going through a funeral and going through all of the different things that we do ritualistically, as far as honoring death or honoring someone that has died, we have to compartmentalize at times. And that's what I tell people. We're really good as human beings in compartmentalizing things when we have to perform in a certain way. And I give people permission that you may not be able to experience your emotions right now because your mind is overriding it and saying, I have to do this and I have to do this and I have to be strong for this person. But to be able to create a space for that person, that when they do have that breakdown, when their defensive structure absolutely starts to crack open, we can say, you know what? Now you might be ready. Now you might be ready to put words onto what you've been unable to put words to.
Okay, so now let's jump to you, Peggy, because I know that children, and I know this from personal experience, years ago when my husband was killed and, you know, our daughter was 11 at the time, and, you know, it was very hard to tell her that her dad was gone. And children grieve much differently than adults. So tell us the stages. Are they different? And I just use the word. But tell us, are the stages different for kids?
So we use a bit of a different model is what I'll say.
Okay.
We talk about the tasks of grief for children and that there's three tasks that they work on. The first task is to understand what debt is. So it seems simple to an adult, right? When you hear someone died, you know that. But to a three-year-old or a five-year-old or the really young kids, they don't even know what dead means, more or less the permanence of it. And people use a lot of different words for dead. They might say, well, the person went to sleep forever, or they went to a better place, all not good things to say, because they will end up having sleeping problems, or they have a hard time understanding how they went to a better place because this is a really good place here with me. So there's a lot of components under that task, but the idea of helping them to understand what dead is and the permanence of it, and that developmentally, kids are really are very much concrete thinkers, so they understand what they can see and touch and feel until they're about 8 or 9 years old. So any child underneath that age has a difficult time understanding an abstract concept. And if a family believes that the person died and went to heaven, then heaven is an abstract concept. I can't go there and come back. So you will see a four-year-old who will say, well, I'm going to go visit him in heaven. I'm going to come back. Or we had a family where the child thought that the cemetery was heaven because the dad, they were going to visit dad in the cemetery and dad was in heaven. So thus the two made sense, right? The other tasks are the idea that once I kind of understand that, to feel the feelings that accompany that, and that runs into all those other feelings. And again, helping little kids identify what's going on in their bodies, identify those feelings, and identify safe ways to release those feelings. We talk about feelings a lot. And then the third task is the idea of going on living and loving and moving the person from a physical part of your life to a memory part. They're never gone, but they're gone physically, but they're always part of who you are.
Okay, thank you so much for explaining that. And of course, we'll have a list of resources on wwjnewsradio.com for everyone can find all this information.
This WWJ News Special, The Grief Factor, continues. Once again, here's WWJ's Greg Bowman and Brooke Allen.
Welcome back. As we've been talking about this evening, grief comes in many forms. WWJ health reporter Dr. Deanna Leitz experienced a loss years ago, the death of her only son. I talked with her about the experience and how she copes.
My five-year-old son, my only child, he passed away when he was five from a seizure. He had epilepsy. And a lot of people do not talk about grief, and especially when it's something as tragic as a child, I think that makes it even more difficult. And I have found throughout the years that it becomes hard for people. And so I try to make them not uncomfortable, or people say nothing. And then you kind of feel like, gee, I wish someone would
acknowledge it, right?
Yeah, or mention something, or like Mother's Day or birthday or something. But they don't, and I guess it's okay. You just don't. They don't know what to do, and you know, I'm not sure exactly what to do either. I was new at this too, but I think that people do want to hear about their loved one, and I think it makes them feel good if someone remembers them or asks a question about them.
What was his name?
Nicholas.
Nick. So you, as a mom, because you will always be a mom, wanting people to know how to treat other moms and dads who have lost a child, what would you say to them?
Well, first of all, not everyone has children, which is fine. That was my only child. So when I meet people throughout, this has been over 20 years, when I meet people, they'll ask you if you have a child. And it's very interesting. If you say no, then they say, oh, no wonder you're always laughing and having free time and different things. And if you say, I did, but he passed away, then you kind of watch the color drain from their face, and it becomes uncomfortable. And it's hard to know what to say, which is kind of interesting, because if people ask if you're married or divorced, that seems to come out fast. People's health problems
come out fast.
You run into people and they'll tell you right away that they've had back surgery or had some type of a cancer or heart disease. Mm-hmm. But something like that is just a little bit more difficult. So I'm not sure what the right answer is. I sort of have followed my own rule, which is if I'm not going to see you again, I probably just say nothing. And if
right.
I am, I probably say something.
Mm-hmm.
But
what helped you immediately after Nick's death?
My faith. I have a lot of faith that I think that things happen for a reason, and we don't always know what that reason is. And I just, I try to have faith, and I try to keep going along. I don't think you get over it. You go through it, and you get through it, but I don't think you get over it. And I have a nice family, and I have wonderful friends, and that helped. And I also volunteered, and I raised money. I had golf tournaments and raised money for a children's hospital. I was living in Florida, and that kind of stuff sort of helped. And I don't know, I just have a lot of faith. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really what I would say for me has been the best thing.
So we want to thank Deanna for sharing her very personal story with us. And I found it interesting that when she needed the most comfort, she almost found herself comforting others. So why do people feel so awkward acknowledging grief? Judy, can you offer some insight?
Sure. I think it comes down to when we've experienced our own grief, we can hold a space and have compassion and have that heart space for others. And when we perhaps haven't had a deep sense of loss, sometimes it triggers up our own personal fear of what would we go through if that happened to us. And so psychologically, we shut down. It's, well, if I don't talk about it, then I'm not making the other person uncomfortable. And in reality, when we don't talk about it, what we're not acknowledging is that that person has had a significant loss. That person, that child or that husband or whoever, that mother or father existed. And I think that's what's so important for us as human beings, is to recognize that just because someone is no longer here, they existed. They impacted other people's lives. So by us being able to put aside our own feelings, our own issues, and being able to extend compassion, that is a huge piece of how we can connect.
And Peggy, we just have a short time left in this segment, but maybe you can talk about it. And I've been guilty of all the things that Deanna talked about in this. It's like, oh, it's Mother's Day. What do you say to someone you know they've lost their child? Do you talk about it? I mean, so how do you know what is the right thing? It's better just to say something than nothing? Or
I think that the hard part is it's very unique for each person of what they want. But if you're close to that person, you ask. I know it's Mother's Day is coming up, and I haven't been in your shoes, but I'm guessing that could be really difficult. Is there anything I could do? Would you like to go out to lunch? I'd love to learn more about your daughter or your son, and acknowledge it and offer it. I think it's important to keep the person's name alive and keep their spirit alive, because isn't that what we all want when we're not here?
This WWJ News Special, The Grief Factor, continues. Once again, here's WWJ's Greg Bowman and Brooke Allen.
Well, as we've heard this evening, grief is universal. Everyone has lost a friend, a parent, a child, or a sibling, or we will. How do you go on after such a devastating loss? We're joined now by WWJ's midday anchor, Jackie Page. And Jackie, listeners may not know your personal story. Tell us about the losses that you've suffered.
My first memory is when I lost my sister, who drowned in a tragic accident when she was 2.5 and I was 4. And we were playing in a basement of a new house. It's a long story. I won't go in it. But she fell into a sump pump and she drowned and she died. And that happened. And I lived with that for my whole life. And then about 20 years ago, my brother died of a brain aneurysm suddenly. And then last year, I had a brother commit suicide. So it's been a lot. It's been very heavy in terms. I'm a very emotional person as a result of all of this. But the hardest part is watching my parents go through it and seeing them grieve over all of this.
It almost sounds like too much to bear. So how have you coped with this?
I have sought therapy. I'm going to be completely honest about that. I think that people really need to seek out therapy, because when you do have a sense of loss, And especially many times you feel responsible. You wonder, what could I have done differently? What should I have done differently? It's not your fault. And there's really nothing you could have done. You do need to learn the tools and mechanisms to tell yourself that it's not your fault, that it's not your responsibility, and that everything is going to be okay, and the other shoe isn't necessarily going to drop.
Of course, this has been hard on you, but what about your parents? How have they coped with all this?
To watch them mourn and grieve their children and not really understand what it would feel like. I had my own grief that I was going through, but not really understand what they were going through, but then becoming a parent myself and seeing and then understanding a little bit better. It has been it's been an eye-opening experience, and it just has shown me, especially when we live in the world that we live in today, that being kind to other people is one of the most important things that you can do, not only for others, but it also helps you.
And Jackie, you think social media, things like texting, can really help people reach out to get help?
There are ways today in this society with social media where you can really get your feelings out there. Facebook, Twitter, texting. I don't really use Facebook or Twitter for any of that kind of stuff, but I have found that texting my friends when I'm feeling down, rather than feeling like I'm burdening them with my issues, quote unquote, that's very helpful. And then again, I would say reach out and talk to a therapist, talk to someone in religious life. If you can feel some type of connection and some type of understanding about life and death, you're going to be a lot happier.
And thanks to Jackie Page for telling us your story.
And Peggy, we just heard Jackie talk about the loss of three siblings. So let's go back to talking about kids for a second, because I can't imagine losing one sibling, much less three, and then watching your parents go through the grief that she just described. So tell us how, as a little child, as a four-year-old, how do four-year-olds, and then as you get older and then lose another sibling, and then how does that pile on, and then how do kids respond to that? And how do you help them respond to that?
So it definitely is going to depend on how old they are. So the younger they are, a lot of times they don't, like I said, they don't understand that permanence of death, but they look, when someone dies, it's a lot about them. So they're asking, what's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to me next? And it's more self-focused. But as they start to get older and get different understandings, they have different situations to deal with. I think understanding that death is permanent is clearly the first answer, but it's not talked about in our society. It's not accepted to have your sister die or anyone die in your life. There's not other people around you that are necessarily going to say, here, I know what to say. I want to talk about this in school because it's not okay. And then they become kind of the outcast in the group. They don't sometimes share, as we talked about earlier, because they don't want other people to know, because they don't want to be different. So it's one of the things about coming to Henry Ford Sandcastles is they get put into a place, especially for kids, of peer support, where they are with others who are walking that same journey. They are with others who understand. And by being in a group of people that are walking that same journey, it helps to normalize what they're going through so they feel like they're not the only one in the world. When we go to camp in August, we'll have 120, 125 kids. And the first thing we do is an opening circle. And we say our name and who died in our family. And they immediately know they're not alone. And once you get into an environment, whether it's in a group environment or in a family environment or friends, where people are willing to allow you to talk about that when you want to talk about it or when you need to, who are going to allow you and help to support you in that and to answer your questions when you have them, it can be really powerful.
And Judy, I saw you nodding your head a lot when we were listening to Jackie. And one thing that surprised me, I think, in her conversation, she was talking about social media, because maybe I underestimate the value that may have as opposed to sometimes the harm it causes. But things like texting and Facebook, Instagram, I mean, you think that could actually help people to reach out instead of, you know, if they don't feel like picking up the phone and actually talking?
Anytime that you reach out and try to connect with another person is helpful. I think having specific groups, whether it's on Facebook, that deal with grief and loss, I think is far more beneficial, because you're talking to other people that are experiencing the same emotional stages that you're going through. I agree totally with what she was saying as far as helping other people to feel connected. We strongly encourage individuals to find a grief support group, whether that's through funeral homes, through different organizations, through hospice, whatever the case may be. When you can connect with other individuals that are going through what you're going through, you don't feel as alone. And loneliness is one of the deepest that's one of the deepest issues that we have in our society, is this feeling of disconnectedness from each other. And there's no greater way to connect with someone than on that level of pain and loss.
Sure. So if we don't talk, if we don't connect, we know we're in big trouble.
Absolutely. Yeah.
This WWJ News Special, The Grief Factor, continues. Once again, here's WWJ's Greg Bowman and Brooke Allen.
And good evening. Thank you so much for being with us tonight as we discuss grief. And we do have Judy Malinowski with us. She's a psychologist with Ascension. Also, Peggy Nielsen. She's the manager and founder of Sandcastles. And we have a question from Debbie Olmsted, who lost her son a year ago on May 9th. And she's wondering when the grief goes away and how to deal with it.
Going to counseling, grief support groups, and I thought that I was dealing with this a lot better. All the firsts have come and gone, and I don't know, this past week I have just been missing him, and all I could do is cry. I don't feel like doing anything. And I'm just wondering when this, or if it does go away, and just how better to deal with everything.
Judy, do you want to answer that first?
You know, I don't know whether it ever goes away. And I think that's one of the things that we have to be able to move into. That's the level of acceptance, of knowing that we may miss this person for the rest of our life. They hold a space in our heart. And the more we resist that, the more it will then become dysfunctional. It's important when we're looking at emotional states to move into them, to embrace them. I talk to my clients oftentimes and I say, when you're feeling an emotion, think of yourself literally leaning into the emotion instead of resisting it. And you will find that you will be able to experience it and then move into remembering also something that made you feel happy about that person. So if I discount all the negative emotions, I also have to discount all the positive. So by embracing the negative, you're also going to be able to give space for the positive. It will get better. The pain will lessen. It's a time factor. And I know that that sounds, you know, maybe that sounds cliche, but it really and truly is. It is a time. There are going to be milestones that you're going to go through, whether it's graduation, whether it's marriage, whether it's all of the things. You're not only grieving the loss of the person, you're grieving the loss of the future with that person. And that's what's important to understand.
And Peggy, asking the question about maybe children feeling the same way, I knew somebody who, he was little, he was four, and both his mom actually died in childbirth. Mm. And he would sit on the porch every day and wait for his mom to bring his little sister home. And this went on for months. So how do you reconcile that for a child? And I know you said age, you know, plays a big factor in that, and he was right at that age.
Yeah. So he's doing exactly what he should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's painful as anything to watch, that is his process of grief. That's the first thing he understands. That's that first task of being able to understand. And so he needs to do that, and he needs to ask the questions. And maybe he's going to ask every day, where's mommy? And he needs a loving, caring adult around who can say, okay, so now, remember we talked about mommy and mommy died. Mommy was very, very, very sick, and mommy died. And that means that her body doesn't work anymore. Her heart doesn't work. Her lungs don't work. She can't breathe. There's certain languages that we can use that are very concrete. And then to answer that question, and as in with any big topic, you give a little bit of an information and wait for them to ask questions, and then you give a little bit more. And over time, he'll ask more and more questions, and he'll be able to go a little further. We talk about there are three reasons why people die. They are very, very, very old, very, very, very hurt, or very, very, very sick. You always have to use the varies, especially the younger the child, because otherwise when they get a paper cut, they're going to come running to you saying they're dying. And then you say, well, you're just a little hurt, but you're not very, very, very hurt. So I think that you'll recover. You know, we can treat this and it'll get better and you will be okay. So the language and kind of talking to them is really important.
I think you mentioned this earlier, but there are some other things. Sometimes people say, well, she just went to sleep, that you should never say that because then the kid's going to think, oh, my God, I can't go to sleep. I will wake up, right?
Right. We see kids at St. Castle's all the time who have sleep difficulty, and they're trying to figure out why. Well, it's because someone told them that their person went to sleep forever, and they are like, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to sleep. And you really think about what our culture uses. We don't use the word dead. But dead is kind of clear. You know, it's pretty clear unless you're playing a video game. Then it's very confusing because you keep coming back to life. But it might be a little bit better than, you know, some of the words that someone expired, right? That's a common word that you hear. Someone expired. Well, if they expired, so does the milk in my refrigerator. You know, so you got to kind of really, using the word dead is a really good word to use.
And it sounds so awful.
It does. And it is.
It is.
But it's clear.
Okay.
And part of that first task for kids, especially if they're under that 9, is understanding what that means.
And something also, I think maybe sometimes people think that they're helping by saying, you know, things that don't help, like, well, you know, it's time for you to move on. Time for you to get over it. You've grieved long enough. Move on with your life, you know.
So not helpful. Yeah. Yeah.
And you hear that all the time, I'm guessing, right, from families, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people, because that uncomfortable level that we were talking about, people don't want to be around that hurt and that pain. Because they don't know what to do with it and they're not comfortable with it. So they just want to help you along. But that really can hurt a person and stunt a person because they can't control how they feel. They feel that. And we talk with the kids about your feelings are never wrong. What you do with them may or may not be, but your feelings are never wrong. And so I can't control my hurt, my anger, my sadness, but I do need to find safe ways to release those. So if you're telling me you don't feel that way anymore, then we're not even on the same plane. Like, you're not helping me in any way whatsoever.
This WWJ News Special, The Grief Factor, continues. Once again, here's WWJ's Greg Bowman and Brooke Allen.
Welcome back. We are in the studio this evening with our two guests, Judy Malinowski, psychologist at Ascension Eastwood Clinics, and Peggy Nielsen, manager and founder of Sandcastles at Henry Ford Health System.
And thank you so much for being with us. This hour has just flown by. And again, talking about grief, something out there that everyone has to deal with at some point in our lives. And the question, I think, is there any way that you can prepare for it? Can you prepare, since we will all at some point experience loss, can you in any way prepare for grief? I don't know which one of you wants to take that first.
Well, I think preparing for grief and loss is no different than preparing for life. As we mature, as we grow, and what I loved that she was talking about was, how do we communicate with a 4-year-old? How do we communicate with a 12-year-old? How do we give them the tools so that they can cope with loss throughout their life? so that when they do have a significant or a very personal loss, they have the tools in order to deal with that. Whether it's, this is how I communicate about my feelings. Instead of acting out in aggression, instead of, you know, hurting somebody else because I'm angry, I learn how to process my emotions. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I see in society. We want to sugarcoat and say, you know what, somebody's having an emotional breakdown. No, somebody's going through something and I need to be able to connect with them. We need to destigmatize individuals going and seeking help. We need to understand that every single person will go through a loss at some point in time in their life. Some people early on, some people later on. No one is exempt from this. And that's the, if you want to talk about the level of denial is that we won't go through this at some point in time in our life. We all do. It's part of our human condition.
And Peggy, you want to add to that, because we touched on this earlier. Sometimes grief is not over a death. It might be over a divorce, or it might be a job loss, or it could be things going on in the family, that the children too, because maybe they aren't telling us right away what's wrong, right?
Right. There's many things we grieve over. If you're old enough to love and lose whatever it is that you love and lose, you will grieve. So whatever that means, even animals grieve. So you can see trends. So it is about honoring those emotions, having a place for to come and talk. So to acknowledge what's happening, to acknowledge and be able to talk about it, to have a safe place to talk about it, and to learn if you need to about the emotions and how to coping skills to be able to deal with it, to learn outlets to let them outside of your body, that stress and that anger, to get it outside of your body so it doesn't make you sick. And to find ways to, you know, to do that. And then important to memorialize. We do a lot of memorializing and memory services and things like that, where you are still reflecting and that person is still part of your life in a memory component, that they're not, you know, they made you who you are. They're an element of your heart, and that death doesn't take that away.
So we do need to ask you real quick, resources. We do have them listed on our page, wwjnewsradio.com. But of course, you have...
So I think the easiest answer to that for Seeing Castles, we are a children's grief program. We will take a call from, you know, we do grief and death. Anyone can call us. It can be a teacher who has a child in their classroom. It can be a parent who's grieving a loss, or who has children who are grieving a loss. They can call. We will help, whether it be whatever resources they need, we will connect. And we also have a website that's on your page that has a lot of good information on it.
So again, go to our webpage, wwjnewsradio.com. We've got links. We've got resources. And if you need help, there is help out there. So
absolutely,
make sure you reach out.
And we would like to say thank you to both of you for coming in and joining us and talking about this very much needed topic. And we would like to thank everyone for their time, and also dedicate this show to Steve Stryker, a colleague of ours here at Intercom, who passed away earlier this month.
All right. Thanks to everyone.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.